You're listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast, powered by Diaga.ie and proudly sponsored by Flomax. Be sure to check out our brand new website, BetweenTheStripes.ie, while you can find us on Twitter at Between Stripes or on Facebook by searching Between the Stripes. Now, here are your hosts, Kieran Burke and Jonathan Breyer.
Hello everyone and welcome to Series 2, Episode 19 of Between the Stripes LOI Podcast. It's Kieran Burke and John Breyer in studio, and I have to start this week's show by saying, John, happy Yorkshire Day.
Yeah, once every year. I should have a day off work, but unfortunately had to work and doing the podcast as well tonight.
Yeah, had the podcast, no excuses.
No.
Huge lineup, John. I think this has the potential to be one of our best shows ever. If you want to run through the guest lineup for tonight.
Well, Kieran, we're delighted to get to chatting to Niall O'Driscoll, the new Bray owner.
Yeah, and we've just done that interview a couple of moments ago there, and superb stuff, very open, very honest, and I think League of Ireland fans across the globe are going to be looking forward to hearing this one.
Yeah, well, hats off to Niall because he answered everything we put at him, didn't he?
Yeah, so, didn't duck any questions.
No, so you want to listen to that one. And we've got another chairman on tonight as well, the Drogheda chairman, Feicre Kearns.
Yeah, great news for Drogheda United last week. The new stadium, 3,000 seater to start out with the scope for 10,000. One of the questions I did put to Feicre when we recorded this interview was, is this going to be another Athlone situation and many other stadiums down the years in Ireland where they never get past stage one? So are we ever really going to see Drogheda United playing in a 10,000 seater stadium? And he gave a very open and honest answer on that as well. So two great guests there. And then we'll have Dan Gorman from Wicklow Sport on. He is going to give us the, I suppose, the supporters' perspective. And obviously he's a journalist in the Bray area. He's going to give us what's the reaction been around the town to the takeover of the club by Niall O'Driscoll. He's spoken to him for his local press as well recently, so some insightful points there. And finally, we'll have Jack Chute on. He is the Cabinteely player. You'll know his father, Paul, the League of Ireland referee. Jack is running the Dublin Marathon in aid of Pieta House, and we also speak about the First Division season so far. But John, let's crack straight into it. As always, we'll start with Europe, and Dundalk 0-0 at home in the first leg of their Europa League tie against AEK Larnaca. I was at this one, so I might just run us through it.
Yeah, well, Dundalk still one of two hopes we've got left in Europe this season. So Cork still there with a match to play. But home match against AE Larnaca finished 0-0, Kieran.
And don't let the scoreline put you off, folks. This was an extremely entertaining game. You could see very early on in the contest that AEK Larnaca were a huge step up on talent, both physically, both technically on the ball. And they weren't afraid to put their foot in, make fouls when they had to. They were very clever in that regard. The referee didn't help. I thought his performance was absolutely disgraceful on the night. And there was a huge mix-up in the second half. Patrick Hooban was shown a yellow card. The referee then produced a red card, believing he had already booked the Dundalk striker, only to then later resend the red card, realising that he hadn't, in fact, booked Hooban. Lucky enough, that didn't come back to haunt them. And I realise I'm after saying Hooban and Hooban there. We're still getting used to that, John.
And we normally criticise League of Ireland referees.
Yeah, it was a very poor performance from the Austrian official. On the game itself, very even contest. I think probably a draw was a fair result. Both teams had chances. Dundalk defensively looked very solid. A couple of very good blocks to deny Larnaca. The likes of Chris Shields and Sean Hoare were excellent on the night. Patrick Hooban missing a couple of chances. Michael Duffy hitting the post. But overall, I think the important thing was to keep a clean sheet. They've done that. And for me, one away goal should do it in this tie.
Never easy going abroad for that.
Especially in this heat.
Yeah. And, you know, having said that, you know, the likes of Derry did very well. Mm-hmm. And Rovers away. So, you know, there is hope there for Dundalk. And like you said, the crucial thing, no away goal for Larnaca.
Yeah, my only worry now, obviously, as I've mentioned on several times in the last couple of weeks, the conditions Dundalk are going to face over there. But then again, they've gone to extremely tough places like Russia, like Israel, and they've acquitted themselves wonderfully well in recent years. The other concern as well, Larnaca were missing, I think, up to five first-team players and a couple of internationals in that. Will those players be back fit? If they are, you're hoping they're not a full throttle. And you're just hoping Dundalk take the chances, especially if they can get an early goal and then sit in and look to do Larnaca on the break. Obviously, the likes of Connolly, the likes of Duffy there will have the pace to punish them. One player I want to pick out in particular from the first leg in a negative fashion, I thought Robbie Benson had a very poor game. I was speaking to a couple of Dundalk supporters at the game, and they haven't been impressed with his performances all season. And for me, I don't think Benson has kicked on the way many Dundalk fans would have expected.
Yeah, obviously he was really highlighted when he was at UCD and came into Dundalk and looked very good with his box to box. You remember that great goal in the
I was just going to mention
Champions
that.
League. So, you know, he had the potential, but you'd want to see him fulfil that potential.
I think the big decision now for Stephen Kenny will be if he drops Benson, is Patrick McElhenney ready to come in and play from the start? He came on against Larnaca and the place erupted. And I have to say, he looks like he hasn't lost a yard and he looks a lot stronger physically. So I'm wondering, has he done a lot of gym work while he was away in Oldham?
Well, he had a lot to say about Oldham, didn't he?
Not in a good way.
No, not at all. So I think he'd be delighted to be back in Dundalk
And Duffy linked up a couple of times out wide in the few minutes he came on, and it was incredible to watch the little touches around the corner, the pace of the two players, the trickery. I think that's a frightening prospect for League of Ireland defenders in the coming weeks and months. So as I said, that's the big decision now for Stephen Kenny, whether McElhenney is ready to start, and if he does, I think that could be the difference maker.
We can only wait and see what his 11's going to be on the night. But can I call you for a prediction, Kieran?
I think if Dundalk get the away goal early, I think it'll be enough. I think they're professional enough. We've seen that in talent, to see out a game, to see out a lead. I'm going to go 1-0 Dundalk.
Yeah, well, I'm hopeful for the same. So let's just keep our fingers crossed that we still have two teams in when it comes to the third round. Now,
Back to domestic.
We're going to kick off with Dundalk as well. They had a 2-0 victory against Bohemians. Bohemians played quite well in this one.
Yeah, another game I was at. Quite a busy man over the week between Talca and Oriel twice. Bohs played very, very well, I have to say, especially in the first half an hour. I actually thought they were the better side, had the better chances. But when you don't take those chances, you're going to be punished. And that's exactly what Dundalk did. And once they got ahead, they never looked like letting the lead slip.
Well, they had an early warning, I suppose, when that man Duffy curled one just wide. But it was Sean Hoare header from a corner that opened the score in there.
Great ball in from Duffy.
Yeah, and then the penalty, Jarvis was brought down. Hoban converted it 2-0.
Stonewall penalty, but for me, I didn't actually think Jarvis was great on the night. That was one of the great... He made a very, very good run for that goal. Got his touch on the ball, was taken down at Stonewall, as I said. But he actually had a lot of loose touches on the night, John, and got away with them. The bounce of the ball off and went his way. So again, that's a decision for Stephen Kenny ahead of that Larnaca game, whether he starts with Jarvis or if Massey is fit. There is an opinion among Dundalk supporters that Massey hasn't looked himself this season. I'd have to agree with that. Whether he's just tired or whether he is carrying some sort of knock, you obviously don't want to be going away in the heat of Larnaca and playing if you're not fully fit. He was rested, as I said, for this game against Bohs. So probably the expectation will be that Massey will come back into the starting 11 for this one.
We'll see. I mean, it's could have been 3 or 4. Hoban and Benson both had shots saved by Supple there, but... Bo's best chance came from Ward. He hit the post and then he had an effort cleared off the line, but he didn't start, did he?
No, I'd love to know why he didn't start, because the moment he came on the field, he added a spark to Bo's, got the ball deep, was pinging the passes wide, and then, as you said, he got on a couple of runs, hit the post, and he had one cleared off the line by Garland, which was great defending after some bad goalkeeping from Gary Rogers. We haven't seen that too often this season from him.
Yeah, that was that blunder at the end where the effort was cleared off the line. Yeah, a bit of a mistake. He'd want to avoid doing that in Europe, that's
just,
for sure.
Just one point I'd like to raise on this game, John. It was one of the first times this season where I was watching the game and I could actually think to myself, you can see the gulf here between the professional and the semi-professional side.
Yeah.
You could see the physicality difference. The Dundalk players just brushing their way by Bohs players. They had the quicker players. The players were quicker on the ball, quicker to make decisions. Bohs played well, as I said, but in the end, they actually got nowhere near Dundalk. And for me, it's a worry now that gulf is going to increase between the likes of Dundalk and the likes of Bohs.
With European money, change of ownership. Could happen, because, I mean, you're looking at a full-time team there that are top of the league against a part-time team, which, let's face it, Bohs are quite struggling this season, struggling for goal scorers. So that's where...
Corcoran, their main man, was non-existent in this game.
Yeah. Very difficult against that kind of defence that Dundalk have. So.
Look, I'm sure we'll speak about the gulf in the league opening up as the years go on the show, but we'll move on to our next fixture, which was a fine home win for Shamrock Rovers against Sligo, 2-0.
Yeah, Coley hit the bar after a cracking move early
super
on.
Move.
Yeah, super move. And but the match really ebbed and flowed at the start. Watts fired at Beanie, who made a great save low down. Drennan shot straight at Manus. So I mean, it could have been, but it was Watts that opened the scoring after a bit of I can only describe as a bit of ping pong in the box.
Yeah, fine finish though from Watson. I'm expecting him to score plenty of those for Rovers now towards the end of the season and in the coming years. At Bowes, I think he knew the players around him maybe didn't have the same quality, so he felt a responsibility to come deep or get on the ball and set the play up from deep. Whereas at Rovers, I think he's going to be allowed more of a free role with the likes of Finn and Bulger around him. I think we'll see him playing a lot higher up on the edge of the D, and he's going to score those long range efforts.
I just feel Rovers seems to be on the edge of something really good.
I think the signing of Watts is a big player in that. I think it's given the club a little boost, giving Stephen Bradley the boost he needs, and you'd like to see them build on that next season and try and close that gap on the top two.
Yeah, we were full of praise for Seamus Sharkey the other week, but he had a late red card.
He's had an awful season, John.
Yeah. The resultant free kick was saved by Beanie. But then late on, what shot? That was parried, and Gary Shaw made it 2-0.
Spilt by Beanie, and a bit of a commentator's curse. I was watching the highlights on Soccer Republic, and I said to myself, Beanie's had a good game again here. Then he goes and spills one. So again, you're always going to have questions over the decision to release a goalkeeper like Schlingerman. Whether there's someone there now to realistically challenge Beanie, is he going to ease off in his performances slightly, and are we going to see mistakes like that on a regular basis? Hopefully not, but certainly a worrying aspect of the result for Sligo fans.
Yeah, I only just picked up that Mitchell Beanie is actually the son of Mark Beanie. He played goalkeeper, he's a bit of a journeyman goalkeeper in the English league, right, played okay. For Leeds at one stage. He was understudy to Nigel Martin there, and right. In fact, I once lobbed him from the crowd at Goodison Park, actually, watching a match while I was at university, but that was a long time ago. Yeah, I did, Kieran. I don't know. We'll move on anyway. Derry against St. Pat's.
That blows our chance of ever getting him on the show now, so done on announcing that one.
Well, I can talk to him about his father.
Yeah, so move on there to Derry and Pat, sorry.
Yeah, so Derry 2, Pat's 1. A bit of a blow for Pat's, but Derry needed a good win. Struggling recently, but... 2-1 with this one.
You called this one, John, but again, it was so similar to the last game at the Brandywell. Pat's had enough chances to win three matches, didn't take them, missed a penalty, bit of poor defending, lets them down, they lose 2-1 in a very important game, and Pat's are just not climbing up that table the way they should be.
Yeah, Ali Roy ran and shot inside the post for the first goal. He's played really well since
his
move.
Great signing.
And Rory Hale shot just wide after Pats failed to clear the defensive lines. But the equaliser came from Ryan Brennan after a poor touch from new signing Seaburn there to make it 1-1. Pats had the chances. Conan Byrne header saved by Jer Doherty. Decent game he had.
Would have been his second header in a week. He got the one against Limerick last week. So good to see Byrne getting in the box there and getting on the end of those types of crosses.
Yeah, and then a Clark save from Ronan Hale. You know, he had a good game as well, Clark. They were both pretty good, these keepers. But it was a decisive moment when Simon Madden was brought down, which gave a penalty. But Killian Brennan actually saw his penalty saved by Doherty.
Poor effort from Brennan.
Yeah, he still has to make the save.
Conan Byrne had gone off injured, and I think he would have been the man to take it. Obviously, he converted one last week at home to Limerick, so it could have been a different story if Byrne was still on the pitch.
The winning goal came from our old friend of the show, Rory Patterson. He made it 2-1 with just minutes to go. And then, what can I describe at the end? Mayhem.
A bit of madness at the end. We love to see it, don't we?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Patterson doing what Patterson does, gets on the end of it inside the box and makes no mistake. A great finish and some great emotion in the celebration from the Derry players. I think they know that was a big win.
Yeah, massive win. And then, like we say, carnage at the end. Loads of red cards and great fun.
We'll move on to another game that was full of controversy, John. Limerick 2-1 winners at home to Waterford.
Yeah, what an awful decision, I thought, early on with Owen Weiran sent off. It looked very, very harsh for me, and this was only in the third minute.
The referee seemed to signal that it was a jersey pull, and the new ruling, of course, is if a player doesn't make a genuine attempt to win the ball, he's sent off. Whereas if you make a genuine attempt and you give away a penalty, that triple jeopardy is gone now. You only get a yellow. So by the referee indicating that he's pulled the jersey, he obviously feels he's made no honest attempt to win the ball, and he sends him off. So if he has pulled him back, I think I have to agree with the referee on that one.
I just thought it looked very, very harsh. And of course then you've got the penalty, but the penalty was saved.
Good save.
Yeah, it was a good save. And then Sander Puri had hit the bar from the resultant corner. So talk about
Waterford
living on the edge.
Started the game quite well, but so much drama in this one.
Their season sort of ground to a bit of a halt, Waterford.
They're still
it?
Playing well, though. As I mentioned on last week's show, I felt they were very unlucky against Shamrock Rovers, and they were certainly unlucky not to get at least a point out of this one.
William Fitzgerald won the penalty at the other end. Billy Dennehy scored to make it 1-0. And then Webster was sent off for a late sliding tackle.
Mm.
Yeah. great run from Bastian Heary. That brought the equaliser from Waterford. And at that stage, I thought they were going to go ahead and win that one.
I think everyone thought that.
Yeah. But
just on that goal from Heary, did you think the defending was crazy there? Both teams are down to 10 at that stage. Mm. So there's no reason you can't keep an extra man back. It's not as if they were at a man disadvantage. Limerick just totally pushed forward, leave the entire half of the pitch
just
free.
Went through like a knife through butter, yeah. Didn't he? You know,
Doofus makes a clever run to take away the defender, open up a bit of space for Heary. But for me, that was amateur defending from Limerick.
Like I say, I was surprised Waterford didn't go and win after that. And Akinadi and Hunt both had chances. But it was a deflected shot at the end from Shane Duggan that made it 2-1 to Limerick. What a lifeline for them.
Great strike from Duggan. Hunt looked lively. Unlucky probably not to get a hat-trick on the night. He had so many chances. But look, that's the way the cookie crumbles. Waterford not taking their chances in recent weeks. And
Rovers are really, really in the mood.
I was just going to say that the heat is on Waterford now. So let's see how they cope with that in the next few weeks.
And then our final match in the Premier League was Bray at home to Cork. And this was 3-1 to Cork.
Could have been a lot more than three.
Well, it could have been. And Barry McNamee, he forced a decent save from Evan Moran early on. We talked about Evan Moran
the previous
week.
I think he's the player of the season, Evan Moran.
Yeah, says a lot when it's the keeper.
Such a young goalkeeper as well.
Yeah. But Shepherd turned Rhys Gorman and shot into the far corner to give a 1-0 advantage.
He didn't just turn Rhys Gorman, he turned him inside out and took him to the cleaners.
Yeah, we were a bit critical on Rhys last week, and I think he's struggling at this level, to be honest. Mm. He was, released from Longford.
I think he's better in a midfield role, to be honest.
Yeah, I would agree. I think when he played for Longford, his best days was in centre midfields. Even though he probably thought he was a defender at the time, you know, but he seemed to do well there. Buckley hit the crossbar, but he scored from a corner to make it 2-0, and then Shepherd got the third after a long ball, which we've said time and time again. Cummings forced a good save, but there was a chance for Bray to score the best goal of the game, as far as I were concerned. What a free kick from Gary McCabe. What a hit.
Great goal from McCabe, but he didn't do a lot else in the game. But I suppose when you're up against Cork and you don't have the quality in that Bray side, the Cork have, it's hard to put your stamp on the game. And I suppose he's done that through the free kick, but as we said, this could have been a lot more than three.
You faced Daly Butts, he should have made it 4-1.
I've seen Daly Butts play for the Irish college and university size. He looks an explosive player, so unlucky not to score in the last few minutes. They're interesting to see if he can have an impact in, if not the league, at least the cup competitions for Cork going forward.
Yeah, but nice to see a bit more positivity about Bray.
Increased attendance.
Better attendance. It just felt a bit more positive, the words coming from the fans. So, that's promising.
As we said, we'll have the new owner of Bray Wanderers, Niall O'Driscoll, on the show a little bit later. But first, we're going to hear from Wicklow Sports, Dan Gorman, on the impact of the new man at Bray Wanderers. Okay, folks, so we're delighted to say we're joined in more positive circumstances for once by Dan Gorman. He's, of course, our go-to man for Bray Wanderers. Dan is a journalist with Wicklow Sport, and he's on now to speak about the takeover of the club by Niall O'Driscoll. Dan, welcome to the show.
Hiya, how are you? Cheers, lad, me.
So as I said, Dan, more positive for once. We've had you on a couple of times in the last year or so, and it hasn't always been in the most positive of fashions, but finally some good news out of Bray Wanderers, and you've spoken to the new man, I believe.
Yeah, no, I spoke on Friday. A couple of journalists came in to press back before the kickoff, did hi everyone, just to let you know I'm Niall O'Driscoll, I'm the new majority shareholder, and I'd be happy to speak to you after the game. And welcome to the new beginning, I think he said, were his exact words. And then true to his word, despite the torrential rain and everything, he came along to the press area afterwards and chatted away for just about 10 minutes to us. And then he spoke to RT as well for a couple of minutes. So we were just asking him, with the first question, I think, was, do you have an idea what you're letting yourself in for? To which he honestly said, no, I don't. But he did say that he's not going employed. So he's done his legs, he's a businessman. So he's obviously done his research. He's not going in there and going to wake up and smell the rose in a bad way. He knows exactly what the debts are or aren't. He said that all debts will be settled, whether on field or off field. He's guaranteed the wages to all the players. So all the vibes are positive, but he's only been there, what's that now, today is Tuesday. He's been there, not even a week yet. So the proof of it in the pudding, we'll really get to know in the next few weeks and months, and if and when Bray are relegated, that's when you'll see what he's about, really, I suppose.
And I believe if you're to read reports, one of the debts owed is to Joey's, of course, the club he's involved with. So a bit of a strange situation there.
Yeah. I was put to him as well about the Joey's link, and he said that his Joey's stuff and his Bray Wanderers stuff were completely different. Now, he didn't comment on the debt. I don't think the debt was actually mentioned. It was just, the Joey's and Bray thing, because there's always a bit of a sticking point here in County Wicklow that Bray Wanderers go to Joey's rather than going to a club in Wicklow. So it's kind of caused a bit of issue sometimes. So he did touch up on that. He said, look, it's worked so far and it's continued to work, so he's going to obviously stick to it. Of course, it's beneficial for him if his own club Joey's can send their best players up here and we look after them. One of the interesting things he said was that he was asked about budgets and stuff, and he said that, like, why would he go out and spend €1,000 on a player when he can't afford us, when he can just get a young fella to do the job? So it sounds like he's kind of very much so go for the youth approach. So perhaps with that in mind, even though I sound mad saying it, maybe the best thing is for Bray to go down gracefully and then start again afresh next year with no debts, no mad budgets, and live within their means, and hopefully obviously build it back up, whether it's a year, 2 years, 3 years. He said himself it's a long term plan, he's not here for a quick turnaround. He knows it's going to be years before he gets to where he wants to be. He talked about the ground, and obviously the talking point is between years about property build. He said whatever's best for Ray Wanderers, that's who they'll deal with. If that means moving to South Dublin, if that means moving to West Wicklow, wherever it may be, he'll do whatever's best for the club, and that's all he seems to care about. Again, it's only a week into his reign, so it's very hard to know how true this already is. There's no reason not to trust him, but the proof will be in the pudding later on when times get tough. So it's all roses at the moment, but everyone's a good feeling in the club. Even on Friday, you walked to the ground, you were handed a leaf, it was phone number on it, you were handed a little we need you post with an email address to send. People are getting involved, volunteers who have long since turned their backs to the club are suddenly coming back. So at the moment, it's positive for normally, as you said, and like the Grim Reaper coming on here with all bad news. So it's great to have something to look forward to. I genuinely did fear for the club's future. A few weeks ago, when the players weren't paid, I thought that could have been it. And now here we are talking about positive things again. So you just never know what's around the corner.
In that interview segment with him, was there any clarity on the makeup of the rest of the backroom of the club? Is Gerry Mulvey still involved? Is there other members still involved there?
It was put to him. Well, Gerry still is a shareholder. No longer a majority shareholder, but he's still a shareholder, as is Dennis O'Connor, as is Pat Devlin, as is John Deering. I think there may be one or two other minors, but they were involved. Now, there is obviously stories that they knew nothing of the takeover and weren't too impressed with it. I think John Deering's considering calling an AGM about it. Now, I'm not a businessman by any means, but as far as I know, with the makeup of the company, I don't think they're obliged to tell them. Obviously, it'd be common easy, might be expected to let them know, but I don't think they're obliged to inform the shareholders of things like that. So, the others will still be obviously involved in some way here before because they're shareholders. But he was pushed on the kind of backroom staff and things like that. And RTE pushed him when we were in the background listening in now. And in fairness to John Kenny, he actually said, no, you haven't answered my question at all there. And he asked him again. He just said, he'll assess everything. He didn't give a solid answer. He said he's going to assess everything, take it for what it's worth and see what's best for the club. So, it's a round of hands from himself as well. He said, he'll do what's best for the club, and if that means changing things, it means changing things. So he said time will tell on that one, so we don't know yet.
I did read that piece today regarding Pat Devlin and John Deering, that there's reports that they mightn't have been aware, but as you said there, perhaps they didn't need to be made aware. And obviously, after everything that's gone on, the last thing we want to see now is some sort of battle taking place. I think everyone wants to see Bray move in the right direction, and hopefully that is under Niall O'Driscoll. Just on the field, Dan, things probably aren't going the way people hope. Things are looking to get sorted off the field, but on the field, things not going the way people hoped. Is it safe to say Bray will be in the first division next season?
Yeah, they're not going the way it was hoped, but probably the way it's expected, I suppose. Yeah. Like 9 points in 9 games. Now, one of them is Limerick at home. Before we get to that stage, with Pat's away, who, in fairness, heard of on himself, but Dennis, I think it's Shamrock Rovers, Waterford and Dundalk. So, where are the points going to come from? And you're even in that, you're hoping that Limerick lose every game as well. So they seem to be kind of picking up wins and now picking up points here and there. So even a draw at this stage could be killer. So I'd say by the time Limerick comes to town, it'll be too little too late, even if we do read them. It's not good, but it's look with the season, whatever's gone, it's what you can expect. They're brave of a habit of, and twice they were relegated and still stood up because obviously Cork and Derry in seven seasons went bust. And then they saved Bray when they were actually playing. So it looks like all things going well. Sorry, all things considered, at the moment it looks like Bray will be a first division side next year. As I touched upon, maybe long term could be the best rather than constantly trying to punch with their weight and stretching themselves too far to go back to the first division and start afresh. Now, it could also go wrong because you see many teams get down there and they're stuck there and they can't get out. It's easier said than done, as you know yourself, Longford. It's not easy to get down there and get back up, but maybe rather than trying to get short-term success, aim for long-term stability and go down and build it back up. And if it takes 5 years, it takes 10 years to go back, it's better that than to risk everything and go bust in a year or two again.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, with the Joey's link there, maybe the club might look to take a new approach with maybe youth in the first team going forward. But that's not necessarily a bad thing, as we're seeing with UCD in the first division this season.
Exactly, yeah. If you get, like, if, as the saying goes, they're good enough, they're old enough. Like, so Joey's obviously produced more players they can count in the last few years alone who are top. Like, a lot of them, they send over so many to England, and then every time, every one of them that comes back will probably be sent straight to Bray Wanderers. Like, so, look, that'll stand the Bray massively. And, yeah, like, maybe it is best, as you said, UCD, they're at its years now, just stage that they're well used to it. It'd be a new kind of breaking ground for Bray. But even, like, the squad at the minute, I think it's accounted today, I think it's 16 players that are 18 or over, and of them, 3 or 4 wouldn't have been near the first team, bar all these injuries. So at the moment, they're playing with kids anyway. Like, it's the very few players that are experienced. Like, you're looking at experienced lads, and they're only, like, Darren Eoin is considered a experienced senior player. He's only 21, 22 maybe. So they are, like, the last years have been youthful, not as youthful as UCD, obviously. But I think long-term, it is the way to go. It seems to be what Niall plans to do, that he's going to cut his clock to his measure and play kids for very little that'll want to play and, like, develop and go on, rather than playing players that have been around the bill for money they can't afford, because that's, as you've seen for the last 3 or 4 years in a row, it doesn't work, and it won't work next year either.
Mm. And finally, there seemed to be a small increase in the attendance, over 800 at the game on Friday night, which is positive. Obviously, it's not a great attendance for a Premier Division game, but after everything that's gone on at Bray, we did see attendance as low as 300, so it is a boost. In terms of going forward for the end of the season, even if the team are to struggle at the bottom of the table, is there hope that Bray can get maybe back over the 1,000 mark and rebuild the links in the community that were so broken in recent times?
Well, obviously Cork brought maybe 200,000-300,000 as well, shouldn't be forgotten. But yeah, look, definitely, like, the atmosphere genuine, it's been a long time. Obviously when Harry Kenny had them flying high in Turton Ford, it was a great atmosphere, but ever since then it's been very flat and very nearly toxic, I suppose. But yeah, like, as soon as you walked in, you were handed leaflets and people were saying hello to you, and there was just a buzz there. Now obviously it's not going to last forever if nothing actually changes, but all the signs so far are positive. Yeah, like, the attendance, everyone's as well documented, like, there's been a few times this year now, albeit on Monday and Tuesday nights and stuff, there's been 200 or 300 of matches, and it's appalling for Premier Division, even First Division, it'll be appalling, I think. So that's something that has to be looked at. Niall has obviously said, from now on, under 14s go free. So it's better to have under 14s paying nothing, sitting on seats, than having no one there at all. Like, if they had 1,000 under 14-year-olds there, and, like, better than just no one. And obviously then, most of them, all of them will have to bring mammy and daddy or uncles or whatever. So that's people paying in. And then, please God, if even a few minor percentage of them latch on to the club for life, you've got lifelong fans there. And it's all worth it. So it's a good initiative. Like, it's better to have 14-year-olds sitting on seats than no one. So look, long may it continue, and hopefully it does pay off. I think it will. I think it's a very good idea. Just depends what they're looking at now. It's the next question, whether they're looking at Premier football or First Division football. It's hopefully going to be a good standard, and it'll keep them coming back week after week.
Well, Dan, hopefully we've shaken off that tag of the Grim Reaper, and hopefully the next time we have you on, it'll be in a positive fashion as well. But as I said, I think everyone agrees it's time for Bray to move forward, and hopefully this is the start of a new era at the club. Thanks for joining us, Dan, and we'll speak to you again soon.
No problem. Cheers. Thank you.
Between the Stripes LOI podcast is proudly sponsored by Flomax. For all your compressed air, vacuum and industrial equipment needs, simply visit flomax.ie.
Now, Kieran, we'll move on to the First Division results, and we'll start off with league leaders UCD, who had a narrow 1-0 win at Athlone.
Yeah, it's good to see improved performance from Athlone in the last couple of weeks. They kept it tight, was it against Drogheda last weekend, I think I'm right in saying, and now against UCD. So improved signs there from the Midlands club, and big news out of that club this week, the long proposed AstroTurf pitch is finally going to be installed, and they're hoping that will not only reduce the cost of maintaining the grass pitch, but obviously bring some income into the club through renting out the pitch.
I know they're supposed to be our old enemies, Kieran, but, you know, I only want the best for all the clubs really in the league, and it's great to see a bit of positive news coming out of Athlone for a change.
You just wonder, though, is it over-egged a little bit? How much income realistically can an AstroTurf bring in? There's talk of when Athlone finally get things in order again, getting back to a semi-professional footing and playing the players, but is an AstroTurf pitch going to be enough to facilitate that?
Well, I honestly don't know, Kieran. No. I know a lot of other clubs have them and that rented out and things, but it's not going to be massive income.
Yeah,
but,
I have invited anyone from the board of Athlone Town or anyone involved with Athlone Town to come on the show this week. They're looking to see, is there anyone willing to do that? So hopefully in the next few weeks, we might hear from inside the Athlone camp. Because I think when you hear our interview later on with Niall O'Driscoll, you'll see how open and honest he was. And that gives fans great reassurance, great positivity. Yeah. Athlone is still a little bit dark. Nobody really knows what's going on there. So we we'd like to shed some light on that if possible. So if there is anyone from Athlone listening, please come on. We'll give you a fair chance to get your opinions across. And yeah, as we said, good to see improved performances, but a 1-0 win for UCD, and they're looking good for the title now, John. 7 points clear.
Yeah, you'd think they're hot favourites now. I'm sure there'll be a couple of twists and turns before the end of the season. It's funny to see, we talked about the loss of the top goal scorer, but it hasn't really affected them, has it?
That man O'Neill who scored has really stepped up.
Yeah, well, he's a good player, you know, but he scored from a penalty spot in that one. But it's interesting that they didn't go on to win by more against Athlone.
But look, they've been the most consistent side. They've played the best football. For me, they would be deserved winners of the First Division, and I don't see them and stop them in the coming weeks.
We shall see. One team that are firing on all cylinders at the moment is Shells. New signing Cal Moore, hat trick, 6-1 against Longford, but I believe Longford's started the better.
Yeah, so this was the other game I was at over the weekend. It was like a bad nightmare, John, that I couldn't get out of. But as you said, Longford started the game well. We didn't see any of this hoofball rubbish that they've been playing in recent weeks. But as I said to those at the game, a lot of Longford fans were saying, the chances we missed, Jamie Doyle missed some great chances early on, we should be ahead at half time. But as I pointed out, if you cannot defend a basic set piece, it doesn't matter how many chances you have in a game, you're never going to win on a consistent basis, because Longford have conceded so many basic, simple set pieces this season. They don't seem to be learning from it. I mean, it was a little floated ball from wide. I'm not sure if it actually got a touch or not. It goes straight through, but the organisation was terrible. A couple of moments later, Shells get a free kick from a similar position. Longford's back four are all over the shop. There's nobody taking control. And I was just saying to a couple of other Longford fans, if this was a couple of years ago when they had the likes of Pat Flynn, Pat Sullivan in that back line, I can imagine a young player stepping out of that defensive line. They would get an absolute rollicking.
Yeah.
So Longford not learning from their mistakes.
But to me, Shell's looking stronger and stronger. They've been linked with Paddy Kavanagh.
Yeah, so as you said, Karen Moore making his debut, got a hat-trick here. If they could get Kavanagh as well, wow, what a partnership that could be.
But you know, the one thing that stood out for me is the difference between Shells and Longford. I looked at the four goal scorers for Shells: Cal Moore, Davy O'Sullivan, James English and Dave Mulcahy. They're four players that would walk into Longford's team, I'd have thought.
Arguably, yeah. As I've said, I was speaking to Longford fans today about how the season has just suddenly gone flat. Longford are a lot of people were saying we don't have a striker like a David O'Sullivan, and the injury to Dean Byrne has been a huge blow. Longford are more than one player away from being at the level that UCD are at the moment. Longford need a good three or four experienced players to come in next season. The big turning point in this game, I have to mention it, was the third goal. Huge controversy. I'm sure everyone has seen it online now at this stage. The referee gets right on top of Daniel O'Reilly at the halfway line as he's trying to play out from the back. O'Reilly plays a pass, it hits the referee, falls straight to a Shells player who then plays O'Sullivan in to a totally free half. O'Sullivan looked offside. From what I could see, the referee looked over at the linesman almost as if to say, dig me out here, put the flag up, because if this goal goes in, it's going to be so controversial. Linesman keeps the flag down, Shells score. There's mayhem after that. Dara Doyle is sent to the stands. A few minutes later, Jamie Doyle lets his frustrations get the better of him. He says something to the referee. He gets a red card. There's a ridiculous late penalty given, so soft. You could tell the Shells player threw himself to the ground. Referee gives that as well. So you can see why Neil Fenn and the Longford players were frustrated by the official's performance on the night. It was never a 6-1 game. At 2-1, Longford looked good to get back into this one. They started the second half so well, deserved their equaliser to Sam Verdon, who's been superb this season. But overall, look, it's the result that matters. A horrendous result for Longford Town. They're now 4 points outside the playoff places, and they simply have to beat Athlone, and you'd like to see them do it in comprehensive circumstances, because the performances over the last couple of weeks, the last month or so, simply haven't been good enough.
Wexford 0, Drogheda 0. Who's the pub team now, said the Wexford fans to you online?
Yeah, I've been waiting for my chance to speak on this one. We had a bit of a pop last week at Wexford. Look, there's issues there. We still know that. I'm sure the attendance wasn't much higher. I think I've seen an estimate of around 100 again or more. So that says all you need to know about Wexford at the moment.
That's an amazing result, though. I mean, they played more than a half with 10 men, Kieran.
Yeah, but John, will they be able to follow that up this weekend? We've seen a few times this season where Wexford have gone out and get surprising results. Even you go back to the very first game of the season where they beat Cavintilly. They've gone out then and they've lost other games by 6-7-0. So there's no consistency at Wexford. Obviously, great result. Yeah, celebrate it. But Wexford haven't been able to match 4 wins is all they got last season. They still haven't matched that. So,
and they've got a very long trip coming up as well.
Yeah, so look, I can see why Wexford fans maybe felt a bit on the defensive after our comments here last week. But for me, there's still a lot of issues to answer in regards to the sustainability of Wexford in the coming years. And look, good result, as we said, for Drogheda, though. That's a disastrous result in terms of the playoff hopes.
Cove's season has well and truly fizzled out. They lost 1-0 at home to Finn Harps to keep their promotion hopes alive.
Yeah, I think we this is probably the scoreline we would have predicted. Always going to be tight when you go down to Cove. Harps is the sort of side that can always dig out a result, and they've done that, and it's a huge one in terms of the promotion hopes. And as I said, with Drogheda slipping up, they've been punished by the likes of Galway and Harps winning around them.
Yeah, they had Michael Place penalty that separated the teams. Keith Cowan sent off their red card at the end, Kieran. And finally, Galway 3, Cabinteely 2. Oi McCormack on the score sheet again, 2 from Conivari. Joe Doyle and Kieran Marty Waters for Cabo.
McCormack's having a very good season there, especially with Furlong been out injured for most of it. I think that's been a detrimental blow to Galway's promotion hopes. But we're going to bring you an interview now, folks, and it's with Cabinteely player Jack Chute. Okay, folks, so we're joined on the line now shortly by Jack Chute, who is, of course, the Cabinteely player. You might also know his father, Paul, who is a referee in the League of Ireland. Recently, Between the Stripes LOI podcast raised over €200 for Pieta House through our World Cup sweepstakes. And Jack himself now is looking to raise some money for the charity doing the 42-kilometre Dublin Marathon. And Jack joins us on the line now. Jack, welcome to the show.
Kieran, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
So as I mentioned there, Jack, you're going to run the Dublin Marathon. If you want to just maybe tell us a little bit more about the motivation behind it and how you're looking to raise funds for Pieta House.
Yeah, well, really, just started at Christmas time. My dad got me and my older brother a Christmas present to do the Dublin Marathon. I don't know what sort of present that is, but anyways, we're going to give it a go. So me and my brother haven't really done much running. Both of us play football, and that's really a go to the gym. But so we said we'd give it a go, and then we said, sure, why don't we do it for a charity? So we've done a few Pieta House football matches for one of the lads over the years, so we said we'd do it for Pieta House. Obviously, we want to raise awareness for around mental health and try bring funds into a charity that helps out with suicide awareness, suicide prevention, which is obviously a big issue in Ireland at the minute. So we signed up for Pieta House, got donating. We're trying to raise €1,500 for the charity. So we still have up till October to try and make it. We're just over halfway there, and we're just going to try to keep trying to raise money for it, you know, yourself.
Good stuff. And I imagine there's a good bit of banter in the dressing room. Is there any wagers going down on whether you'll finish it or not?
That's the lads keep giving me stick whenever they're on fitness runs. They're saying, that's the only reason you're ahead is because you're training for the marathon. But really, I haven't done a huge amount yet because it's hard to get it in with training and matches. I don't really want to be doing a mad run on the day of training or the day before the game, otherwise I'll be tired for that. So it's hard to try and get too much distance in, you know.
And who's the quicker runner, yourself or your brother?
Sorry, what's that?
Who's the quicker runner, yourself or your brother? Will there be a wager on that? Who might finish first?
My brother stopped playing football the last few months, just due to work. Well, he's getting out doing a lot more runs than me because I can't really with football and not being looking after my body for football. So he's up to about 25k in one run, and I'm up to about 20. But we try to get out as much as we can together, because it's a bit easier, you know, when you're running together, going at the same pace, just having each other to motivate and chat to along the way. Like, so I don't know, I think on a day we'll probably do it together and it won't be too much competitive about it, but we'll see how we get on.
Sounds like you're getting the excuses in early if you ask me. Look, Jack, we'll speak about your season with Cabinteely in a moment, but just for the folks listening in, how can they donate to the cause?
You can donate through my Twitter page, which is JackChute2. I have a link there pinned onto my Twitter page, so obviously you'll see it with you tweeting about the conversation we're having now on your podcast. So Twitter is the main way. Obviously, if you know me, you can make donations through me, and I'll be having a card writing on the names and numbers and stuff like that along. So any donations made will be a great help, just trying to raise money and try to raise awareness for a good charity.
Yeah, so just to our listeners, if you follow at Between Stripes, you'll see a tweet from myself, which is at KieranBTS. You can get the link there. And Jack as well, Between the Stripes is going to throw in a little something too to help you along the way.
That's great. Thanks very much, Kieran.
We'll speak about the season with Cabinteely. You have a huge game this weekend, a derby at home to UCD, the league leaders. I think most people feel now at this stage UCD look set to go on and claim the title. Are you hoping to throw a little spanner in the works?
Yeah, you're right. They look pretty good. They're, I think, 7 or 8 points clear at the top. But we want to have our say in every game that we can for the rest of this season. We've been... We've probably let ourselves down the last couple of weeks with results, trying to get ourselves back into the playoffs, but we want to have every save. We want to finish as high as we can. So going and beating UCD this Friday will put down a good mark in the league, saying that we're not just going to turn up for the last few games. We want to win as many games as we can. So
Myself and John spoke about Cabinteely. Myself and John spoke about Cabinteely in depth last week, and one thing we pointed out was the fantastic home form, especially against the bigger sides. And of course, Longford were one of the sides who fell foul of that. Has it been disappointing? You haven't been able to maybe to match that away from home, and with that performances away from home, maybe that's why Cabinteely are just outside those playoff places this season.
Yeah, I think mainly consistency, or maybe not really having too much experience in the squad. I'm not sure, but we haven't been really ruthless enough in both boxes. And like, we had great wins against Shales, obviously ourselves, draw the UCD at home, and we probably just sort of away games to the likes of Cove and Wexford. We just think let ourselves down with points, and we should be trying to get maximum points. I don't know what it is, but hopefully we can change it up anyways. But yeah, I think our away form has probably let us down this season.
Just on Cabinteely, overall, you can give us maybe a good insight from inside the camp. How do you feel the project is at Cabinteely is going? Obviously, we're seeing issues at other League of Ireland clubs, but Cabinteely, since they've come into the league, been very professional about how they've done things. There hasn't really been any whispers of any financial issues there. Good social media presence off the field, trying to get youngsters
in.
They're
making great strides. They're only a new club, I think, 4 years now. This is my first year with Cabinteely, and everything's professional about it, from training to kit to match day, like coaches, everything. We haven't been let down once for anything, so I'm enjoying my time here a lot. Obviously, it's only a new club, so they're just trying to build a fan base.
Mm.
So that's obviously going to be tough, just starting out as a new League of Ireland club. But I think they're making all the right moves and the right ways about it. So even social media is a big way to get a good attraction to your club. So I think they're quite busy on that, which is an important thing nowadays.
And finally, I'm sure this is a question you're asked all the time, but was there ever a consideration to follow in the old man's footsteps?
Not at the moment, when I can still play. maybe in a few years. I'm not going to put it down, but at the moment I just want to be a footballer and play at the highest level I can.
Jack, been a pleasure having you on the show. Best wishes with the marathon and the rest of the season. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks very much.
Enjoying the show so far? Why not leave us a review on iTunes? Want something featured on next week's show? Get in touch via Twitter at Between Stripes, or find us on Facebook by searching Between the Stripes. Finally, our new website address is www.betweenthestripes.ie. Enjoy the second half.
So, busy weekend of First Division action coming up, and we're going to kick off with UCD league leaders hosting Cabinteely.
Yeah, Dublin Derby, so we've just spoken to Jack Chute. Sounds like the Cabinteely camp are well up for this one. But as I pointed out in that interview with him, Cabinteely haven't been able to match the away form that they've shown at home and turning over the big sides. So for me, I think UCD are just going to continue. They've been the most consistent side this season. Can't see anything other than a student's win here.
Yeah, Cabinteely, they tend to blow hot and cold, I'm afraid. They never seem to get a string of results that have put them in the contention this season. So I'm also going to go with a UCD win, and they'll probably keep that lead at the top of the table. Shelburne host Cove, they'll be very confident after that 6-1 win.
Yeah, I got a bit of stick as well from a couple of Wexford fans. I had to laugh at it. They were saying, I heard you say on last week's show that Shell's goals have dried up. Then they go and put 6 past Longford. So I think the confidence is going to be flowing again. Carl Moore he's a Premier Division player, let's be certain about that. And if they can get Paddy Cavanagh in as well, this Shell side, I'd make them the favourites out of all the teams that are probably going to end up in the playoffs for promotion. If a First Division team is going to go up that way, but as I said before, I don't think they will. I think there's just too many games to play. The odds are really stacked against the First Division side, and if it is Limerick that's in the playoff, they're actually playing quite well at the moment. So I don't fancy a First Division team to go up other than UCD, of course, but for me, Shells get the win here.
Yeah, I'd have to disagree. I think the Shells team could beat Limerick, Kieran, but look, we'll just have to see. There's plenty of football to play
There's a huge gulf between First Division and Premier Division. I've heard other pundits say on shows this season that they don't believe there is such a gulf, that the top 5 or 6 in the First Division could easily step up. That's not the case. They mustn't be watching as much First Division football as we are. The standard is relatively poor, but it's been entertaining this season thanks to the playoffs being there. It's given every team a carrot to aim for, but the Premier Division's a much higher standard. I think Limerick would quite comfortably beat Shelburne.
Right, we'll see on that, and we can record that. We've recorded that. That's there.
My predictions are a waste of space, so yeah, Shells probably will go up and be in the Premier next season.
So Shells win for me as well with that one. Harps host Wexford. It's a long trip for them.
Yeah, Harps are a side that are still just, they're scraping by the results. They're not getting the avalanche of goals that you would have expected at the start of the season. Obviously, the O'Connors there have departed and gone to play up the north. But with Ollie Organ, they're set up very well. They're not going to concede goals. I think Wexford will make it difficult for them. They'll look to sit in and be defensive like they were against Drogheda. They'll obviously have a bounce after that result. You'd like to think Harps can just get another 1-0 here, but I'm going to go for the Harps win because, as I've said, Wexford haven't followed up results this season, positive results, with another positive result. So I think Harps win this one, but it could be tight.
Yeah, Harps for me as well, Kieran. Now the El Clasico, Longford Town against Athlone.
It's amazing, John. This used to be a gimme fixture. It used to be 3 points and an avalanche of goals for Longford Town. But the way Longford are playing at the moment, and obviously with the morale is surely going to be low after that 6-1 defeat, you would worry, especially with Athlone in the form they're in. But look, I think Longford know their season ends here and now if they don't win against Athlone and get a couple of goals as well, because the goal difference is starting to go out of Longford's favour too. So I think the players, I've been looking at a couple of tweets they've put up, like Dylan McGlade, I think they're out to prove a point, prove people wrong. There's been a lot of unfair criticism on the team in recent weeks, unfair criticism on Neil Fenn as well. I think they'll all be out to prove a point. I'm going to say 3-0 to Longford, and I want a scoreline prediction from yourself also.
All right, okay. Well, the Longford have a fun family day as well before that match. So
yeah, we just better mention that actually. It's been run with the FAI and Longford Town. There will be a family fun day at the City Colin Stadium from 5 o'clock on Saturday afternoon. So you can go out there, you can get your tickets for both the family fun day and the match. Some great deals. I don't have the prices in front of me at the moment, but if you check out the Longford Town Twitter account or their Facebook account, you'll get the information on that. Hopefully the weather holds up, but a range of activities for all the family. So make sure you get down there and stick around for the match afterwards.
Why not? Hopefully a swell in attendance numbers and a good win for Town. I'm going to go 4-1.
4-1.
Final match, and one of these teams is going to lose a bit of ground at the top. It's Drogheda against Galway.
Game of the weekend for me in the first division, John. We've seen recently with Drogheda their ability to win these big head-to-head six-pointers. That game up in Tolka Park, I'm thinking of when Sean Brennan scored one of the goals of the season from a free kick. And for me, I think they'll have confidence in that regard. They'll be looking to bounce back from that disappointing result against Wexford. I'm going to go with a home win.
Yeah, me too. I fancy Drogheda to beat Galway. So,
And with that, folks, we're going to bring you a very special interview now. It's the chairman of Drogheda United, Fear Kirkirans. Okay, folks, so I am delighted to be joined on the line now by the chairman of Drogheda United. It's, of course, Fear Kirkirans. Fear, you're very welcome to Between the Stripes LOI podcast.
Thanks, Kieran. Good evening to you.
Fiacre, of course, great news last week for the club. A new stadium now looks set to finally go ahead after many, many years of hard trying, I'm sure, as most League of Ireland fans know. It's going to be, as far as I understand it, a joint proposal between the FAI and Louth County Council. So maybe you can just give us a little bit more information on the plans for the new stadium and tell us about the impact it's going to have for both the club and the town of Drogheda.
Well, you're quite correct. It's a very major development for the town of Drogheda, I have to say. And for the club itself, it is a joint initiative from Louth County Council and the FAI, which is a very important point to make in it, because it's not a developer driven development. If you understand, you know. So once it was announced last Thursday, that was the official announcement from the FAI and Louth County Council on behalf of both of them and ourselves and the club. So this is going to go ahead. This is live now. It's a project that's got its legs.
I suppose Drogheda fans have had many false horizons before. There's been so many battles, as I said, to try and get a new ground. But as you said, this is finally the one that's going to happen, and the plans now that are in place, a 3,000-seater stadium to start out with, the hope of maybe 10,000 going forward.
Absolutely. It's a fabulous development. It'll bring League of Ireland football in the Drogheda and its environs to a new level. If one thing we have suffered over the last few years, obviously, is our current home, United Park, would have taken a considerable amount of money to redevelop.
Mm.
And one of the reasons we didn't want to do that, despite the fabulous history of United Park, here was we wouldn't have had space for training, which is and the other ancillary things that will go with it. This new development will cover all of that for us. It will become the centre of soccer in South Louth, which would be fabulous.
And for those who maybe are familiar with the town of Drogheda, where exactly is the new site going to be?
geographically, it's actually only about 10 minutes from our current home in United Park. It would be out the Termin Fecken Road, just off the Termin Fecken Road. So about 10 minutes from the town itself, from the centre of the town, on the north side of Drogheda. Okay.
And just in terms, as I mentioned there, it's going to be a 3,000 starting off in phase one with the potential for 10,000. I suppose the one criticism a lot of people would have of League of Ireland grounds is they never seem to get past phase one. I'm thinking of grounds like Athlone, never got past its first phase. There's many others as well. What are the chances that we'll see this stadium fully developed in maybe 2 or 3 years' time after it opens?
Well, I think one of the major things that would apply here is we'd be able to hold European football, which is the first thing, and that... in terms of underage internationals and that, so it would be up to us as the board of Drogheda to develop the ground to meet these requirements. You know, I mean, there's no point in building a 5 or 7.5 or 10,000 seater if all you need is a 3. Let's take small steps slowly. You know, this is, even to build a 3,000 all seater is a considerable undertaking. You know, so I'm quite happy that we make the first step. And that would give us something to build. And Drogheda is getting to be a very large urban area. So, you know, I would expect over the coming seasons that we could grow our fan base, fill the 3,000, and then hopefully take it to the next level then after that. You know, you can see in Tala there with Shamrock Rovers after a few years now have gone to the next stage and that. Mm. You know, and that would be our ambition.
And I suppose one of the most interesting aspects of this stadium proposal is the fact it's going to be a municipal stadium, especially with all the furore recently regarding the shared use, I suppose, of sporting venues. Is there any indication as to yet what other codes we might see using the ground? Obviously, Drogheda will be the main tenants at the new ground.
No, there's no other indication. My understanding is at the moment, Drogheda are the anchor tenants and That is the state of play at the moment.
Okay, that's perfect. You mentioned there earlier training facilities and stuff like that. So are we going to see the likes of Astro pitches going in there and different types of facilities other than just the main stadium?
And other grass pitches. I mean, like a lot of other League of Ireland clubs where we are currently running under-19s, under-17s, under-15s League of Ireland with under-13s to come on next year. So, we need facilities to meet the training and playing of those matches. And we also need to have the facilities to bring our local soccer clubs in, you know, to provide training facilities for them. At the moment, training facilities are scarce in Drogheda. Before I was involved with Drogheda United, I was a coach with Boyne Rovers, so I know how difficult it is to access and retain training facilities for underage teams. And I mean, that's the ambition is not just to strengthen Drogheda United. The ambition would surely to be strengthen soccer in the region in general.
And I'd imagine by doing that then you're creating links with the local community, with other clubs in the area, and hopefully the club will benefit from that.
Well, ultimately that's the long term aim. I mean, that we've already started that as part of our 5-year strategic development plan, and look, we're happy to work with anybody in the area to provide the outlet. Sport over the next decade is going to become even more important in this internet day and age. You know, we need to get kids out there playing any sport. And I'm not myopic in terms of whether it's just soccer or that. You know, I'm a soccer man. I fancy everybody playing soccer naturally. But we have to give the space and the facilities to kids to achieve their potential, and that's what all this is about. For too long, we've had run-down facilities or a lack of investment, and this is a very, 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 very serious investment from Leeds County Council and the FAI in strengthening soccer in this region.
Yeah, well, I think everyone agrees it's a great step forward for Drogheda United and for the town of Drogheda and football in the Louth region. So fantastic to get your views on that, Fiacre. Just before you go, obviously it's been a great season so far for Drogheda United. Second in the table, a disappointing result at the weekend though, leaves you 7 points behind UCD. Are you starting maybe to look at the playoffs now as opposed to the title?
No, I wouldn't. No, there's still there's still games to be played. I'm very, very happy at where we are, you know, in terms of we took a bold risk, I think, at the start of the season in our managerial appointment.
Yeah.
We could do that because we run our club in a ship-shape fashion. We don't have a major benefactor that's calling the shots or calling the tune, you know. So the board have worked very, very hard. We had a policy of what we were looking for, and Tim Clancy and Kevin Doherty picked that box, you know. And it was a brave move, I think, on behalf of the club to go for an untried, unproven. But we have to get off the merry-go-round. We had to look at doing something differently. We have a good squad of players there who, an awful lot of them who were signed under Pete Matton's watch, and it shows you the astuteness of Pete that those players are still with us. We've players in their early 20s who are going into a third, fourth, fifth season in Lloyd Buckley's case, which I think is a fabulous achievement for a club that has been through the mill in the last few years. You know, so those players will deserve their good news in terms of the stage in development and seeing the facilities come together. The board, certainly for their efforts and their hard work in the four seasons, certainly since I've been there, I couldn't fault one of them. And it's a considerable effort to keep a League of Ireland club on the go week in, week out. And I've great admiration for any club that puts themselves forward for it. It's an extraordinary task to do it. And to have this good news, these are the days we live for. You know, we pursued a policy of going with a young manager, which this season I think has proved beyond our expectations. I'm delighted for Tim. He's an extraordinary manager. He's hit the ground very, very much running. And the players have responded well to it. The local business community have been great to us, as they always are. Our major sponsor, Scotch Hall, have been so positive. I mean, for a club that's been relegated twice in three seasons, it's a fabulous testament to their support of what we're trying to do, that they continuously back us and stick with us and work with us to develop the soccer in the region. And I think it's a slow process and it's coming together. I'm quite happy to be in second place. If you'd asked me at the start of the season, I would have taken it. You know, sometimes this is just as good as it gets. So we'll take each game as it comes now and see where we can take it towards the end of the season.
It looks to be an extremely tough run in for Drogheda, but obviously, as you said, they're far beyond your expectations this season, so it looks very likely now Drogheda will claim a playoff place. And just in terms of that financially for a club, how important has it been that the playoffs have returned this season? There seems to be a lot more life around the First Division. Have you found it easier to attract new supporters out to the games? And in terms of your attendances, how are they overall this season?
They're in line or a little bit less than we would have possibly expected in the First Division. Certainly the first half of the season, we were happy enough. You know, we've tailed off a wee bit. The good weather didn't actually do us any favour. You know, it's an extraordinary statement to be in. You know, the sun was shining and it took people's eye off the ball, you know. But Drogheda is a lively, lively town at the moment with the Fla and that coming up and the national profile of the town. And I like to think that we in Drogheda continue to keep the profile of the town raised nationally through sporting endeavour, which is always good. It's been very positive this season. Very happy with it. I'd like to see the crowds increase a wee bit more. But this is the first step in building a proper fan base. I think in this day and age, we have to have the facility. People would no longer accept or tolerate antiquated facilities, and unfortunately that's the position we found ourselves in United Park, and that the cost of redevelopment was so high, coupled with the fact that there was no extra ground available to us in terms of training, access and training space, this makes the new stadium such a fabulous development.
Fikre, it's been wonderful having you on the show. Thanks very much for joining us, and as I said, I think everyone agrees the new stadium plans are a great boost for Drogheda, the town, and football in general in Ireland. So thanks for joining us, and we'll speak to you again soon.
I appreciate the call. Have a good one. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
BetweenTheStripes.ie is sponsored by Diaga. Based in Buncrana, County Donegal, Diaga are world leaders in top-class logo and graphic design, website building, film production, illustration, and much more. For further information, please visit diaga.ie.
So before we go on to the Premier Division predictions, John, I have to say I really enjoyed St. Mel's tweet to yourself during the week. Of course, St. Mel's Brewery are the sponsors of the St. Mel's Brewery prediction game here. I'm 7-1 down, my chances are gone, and St. Mel's made a little fun of that online during the week.
Yeah, they did, and they've sent me the exact measurements of the mixed case, and I'll tell you something, I've measured it out in the fridge and I'm going to have one hell of a hangover the day after.
Oh god, let's see, can I try and put a bit of respect on it? I did offer for any of our fans to come on and play on my behalf this week, so if you're listening, folks, and you want to come on, we don't have a show next week. I'm heading away on holidays, thank God. Need a break after that result of the weekend. But the week after, if anyone wants to play on my behalf, drop us a message on Twitter. Our handle is @BetweenStripes, or just get in touch with us on Facebook through a private message. And we'd love to have you on and play on behalf of myself in the St. Mel's Brewery prediction game once you're over the age of 18. And if you can beat John here, we'll make sure St. Mel's throw you out a few bottles of their fine beer.
Very nice.
But let's move on to the Premier Division predictions, John. And we'll start at Oriel Park, Dundalk, down to host Shamrock Rovers.
Ah, these are always a crackers, aren't they? Yeah. I always like these matches. Dundalk and really, really good form at the moment, improving Shamrock Rovers. Dundalk may have a European hangover to deal with.
I'm not sure on the situation on this game. If Dundalk progress in Europe, whether this one actually goes ahead, we probably should have checked that, but, you know, research and all that. So.
Yeah.
But if the game does go ahead, let's talk about it in that sense. Rovers put in some good performances against Dundalk this season. We're unlucky probably in the game in Oriel. You remember that goalkeeping error from Horgan, an absolute howler off of Chris Shields' dribbler.
Yeah.
Obviously the goalkeeping situation is more than sorted now at Rovers, with Alan Manis coming in, Gavin Bazunu and back up there. Watts, as I said, has been a huge addition there. He's added a bit of spark. Gary Shaw back scoring goals. Was chatting to him there the other day. It's great to see him back scoring goals and enjoying his football again, and I think you have to pay credit to him. He had the chance to leave Rovers in the window, but he wanted to stay, fight for his place, and he's proven that decision right with two goals in recent weeks. Carr looks dangerous, missed a couple of chances in the last game there. Dundalk, obviously their home form is super impressive this season. It's a very tough one to call, but I would have to say, with the likes of Duffy playing the way they are, with the likes of Connolly playing the way they are, with McElhenney back in the fold, I would say 2-1 to Dundalk. And I'm going to push you for a score prediction on this one also.
I think it'll be a Dundalk win, but I think it'll be very narrow. 1-0 for me, Kieran.
Perfect.
Waterford host Cork. Waterford just going off the boil a little bit. Still playing decent, but tough one at home to Cork.
Yeah, Cork, as we said, could have had a lot more than three against Bray. The likes of Shepherd have really stepped it up in recent weeks. He's looking like the player that he was last season. Waterford have gone off the boil, but they're still playing well, but their inability to take the chances when they come, I'm especially aiming that at Akinade. He's missing a lot of very good chances recently. Doofus doesn't seem to be having the impact he did at the start of the year. Noel Hunt came in, he missed a lot of chances in the last game. I think Cork are more clinical. I think that'll be the difference here. I'm going to go for a narrow Cork win.
Yeah, I have that as a away win as well, Kieran. So, but I wouldn't be surprised if Waterford got something out of that. But I think, yeah, Cork will edge it, because they need the points to keep up with Dundalk as well.
And Waterford needed to get away from Rovers again.
Oh, this should be a good one. Derry against Sligo.
Yeah, big game for both sides. Sligo are still far from safe at the bottom, and we must just say a quick congratulations to our former guest, Rafael Cortaro. His testimonial last weekend, a great event by all accounts, and he has been a credit to Sligo Rovers Football Club in the last, I think it's 17, 18 years, seasons he spent there.
It's now a superb career, really.
Yeah, a great ambassador for the club, so well done to Raf. Derry, that was a huge win against St. Pat's, but in very fortunate circumstances, I thought Pat's definitely deserved at least a point from it. Derry's inconsistency has been worrying this season. They have the home advantage here. Ali Roy's going to be able to prove a point, isn't he?
That is exactly what I was going to say. Two words, Ali Roy. Yeah. Because he's scoring goals at the moment. You know, you remember he was released by Sligo. He's gone to Derry. Yeah, he's going to score in this one.
Before we give a prediction on this one, I think I've made my mind up, John, on it. But just some news on Sligo Rovers today. They have replaced Bray Wanderers in the Iron Brew Cup. St. Pat's were the team next in line to replace Bray, but they rejected the invitation. Sligo taking up that place alongside Bohemians, who qualified through their league position last season. And the other big news is that Adam Morgan has left the club.
Yeah, unfortunate for Adam. He was struggled with injury, hadn't he, in recent weeks. Started off the season well, but shame.
Just on the Iron Brew Cup, Pat's rejected it, so that shows maybe there's a decision for clubs to make there whether it's worth their while or not. What's your views on it?
Well, I don't know. I don't think it's worthwhile, to be honest. I mean, I don't see any real good coming out of it. Yeah, okay. The only thing I can see as a decent thing is a great away trip for the fans.
Yeah, the issue I've noticed with this competition since it came in, obviously, is the fifth and sixth side that qualify for it. But when those sides aren't able to kick on and get into that top four because of the finances, which is usually the case, the next season they very may well be in a relegation scrap, as we're seeing with Sligo. So do you really want to be taking your eye off the ball going away to Scotland or playing a Welsh side, a Northern Irish side, whatever it may be? I think it's a bit of a distraction. I think Pats are probably right to turn it down. I don't think the prize money is anything to write home about. So a strange decision from Sligo.
That's a shame about the prize money, because the competition itself has a great premise. You know, it'd be interesting to see you know, the likes of Sligo playing a Welsh team like Ballater or you know, TNS did well or something.
But the two Irish sides last year didn't do very well. I don't think either of them got through the first round. I wouldn't be expecting a much better turnout this year. But look, we've spent enough time on that. We'll get a prediction. I'm going to go for a Derry City win.
Yeah, agree with that. Bose host Limerick. This one's quite interesting. That Limerick give themselves a bit of a lifeline with that victory over Waterford.
Relegation six-pointer, John. The big issue with Bose this season has been their home form, as we've mentioned on numerous occasions. Limerick showed in the first half away in Richmond Park recently on the live game on air that they're able to put in the performances away from home. But I was listening to their Dutch midfielder, Barry Maguire, the most Irish-sounding Dutchman ever, recently on the Greatest League in the World podcast. And he has admitted that they're struggling to match their second-half performances with what they're doing in the first half. So whether that's just a conditioning thing, obviously Bowes aren't full-time, so you'd like to think Limerick can match them. And now that the issue with wages and everything has been resolved down there in recent weeks, you'd like to think Limerick can get their heads down and focus. Bowes, they play well against Dundalk. They'll probably look to build off the positives from that one. If Keith Ward is starting, I think he can be the difference between the sides. But Dinny Corcoran's form worries me, so I'm going to go for a draw.
Do you know, I had this down as a home win, and I'm just thinking it over again, and I'm actually fancying Limerick to win this. Really? So I'm going to go for an away win.
Okay, that's nice to see a bit of difference between the
sides. Well, I just think they're on a bit of form, and there's a bit more positivity there. Bowes at home.
Dreadful.
Yeah. Going to go with Limerick.
Okay. And our final fixture in this week's St. Mellors Brewery prediction game from the Premier Division comes from Inchicore, and it's St. Pat's versus Bray Wanderers.
More positivity at Bray. St. Pat's still up and down, more down than up recently. A bit unlucky not to get anything against Derry, but you know, I think this is going to be another...
And Bray already have a win over Pat's this season, so...
I just think Bray have too many mistakes in them. I'm not convinced by the defence is always cut open with long balls.
Relying on Moore and a lot to dig them out of holes. As a young player, you're expecting them to make a mistake somewhere along the line. So you'd like to think Pats can win this one. I think if they don't win this one, their fans are certainly going to start asking questions, because their form over the last couple of months has been dreadful.
Yeah, Bray just don't have the players, Kieran, I'm afraid, to stay in this league and perform. So I'm going for a Pats win.
I think this one might play out similarly to the Cork game. I think Pats will have too much for Bray. Could see a similar scoreline, 3-1. Pats have a lot more attacking power in their game. So if I was going to give it a scoreline prediction, I'd say 3-1. But yeah, the bottom line, I would go for a Pats win, which is what you're also doing. Folks, we're going to bring you our final interview of the night. It's the one you've been all waiting for. It's the new owner at Bray Wanderers, Niall O'Driscoll. Okay, folks, so there was a great step forward for Bray Wanderers Football Club in the last week or so. A new owner at the club, Niall O'Driscoll. And Niall O'Driscoll joins us now on Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Niall, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, guys.
So, I assume you've been a very busy man in the last couple of days, but I suppose the question everyone wants us to ask is, who is Niall O'Driscoll?
Who's Niall O'Driscoll? I sometimes wonder the answer to that question to myself. Who's Niall O'Driscoll? Somebody who's into football, happily married, runs an insurance business, and gets a bit of fun out of doing what he does. That's in a nutshell, you know. Yeah, obviously, I suppose from a more serious point of view, from the football perspective, I've been involved in football for 40 years at this stage, and enjoy what I do in it. So I suppose the opportunity came up here, forgetting the circumstances that surround it all, and it's a matter of here, let's have a go at this. Can we build a club? Can we build a community? Can we get people to love a football club?
And the motivation for taking over Bray, I suppose there's been a lot of negative headlines over the last couple of seasons. Did that maybe put you off at all slightly?
Yeah, well, you know, I suppose the issues in the National League, not just Bray, but one or two other clubs, obviously, you know, doesn't do football in the country any good, you know. Certainly, I suppose the relationship I've had with Bray for the last 20 odd years through the links with Joe's and bits and pieces like that, you know, it's only up the road. There's you know, in a big relationship for 20 years, good and bad days, you know, and it's worked out well some days, hasn't the other days, and that's where we are. So it probably was an easier decision to make if you're talking about in terms of clubs, you know what I mean? And I would have affiliation through, obviously, family connections with the McAvoys over the years and a lot of the people, the Vances and all that from Joe's.
Funny now, I was speaking to Kieran before we started here about how things can change so quickly in League of Ireland. Bray, a few weeks ago, looked like possibly going out of business, players going on strike, not training at the club, inability to pay wages. But you must be delighted with the impact that you've had so far and the response you've got from the media and the local supporters.
Oh, yeah, well, I think all decisions like this generally are made quite quickly, you know, I suppose. Where I come from is when I make a decision, you know, here, we agree it, we move on, we get it done as quick as possible. But and that happened really over a period of sort of 4 days from start to finish, to be honest with you. And that's a credit to the few people that have supported me in that one. But no, absolutely the reaction, and you are right, you know, from where one club goes on the negative press to you know, a far more positive reaction. I think that says a lot for the people of Bray and Wicklow, you know. I think it also says a lot of what they've been through for the last couple of years. Not just on wanting the football club to come and support and shout, but for the whole football community. Like that has been fragmented in Bray, and what clubs are, you know, are supporting the top of the National League club right down to the leagues. What's really surprised me is the number of clubs in Bray, and indeed the leagues who have been on sort of been seeing this as a real positive. And all I could offer them is, you know, if they need the grounds for their games or anything we can do, or can we help with their coach or their teams or whatever, absolutely, we'll do what we can. Because I think this is all about all the stakeholders, not just the kids, which obviously I have a big passion for, but for the local clubs, for the leagues, for senior football. You know, I only read there the other night, the Carlisle grounds, one of the oldest grounds ever in sporting history in Ireland. You know, what a legacy to start on.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And one thing I picked up on, which is a real positive, is what you're doing with children's tickets, offering, you know, so you quite clearly stated that children won't be paying to watch Bray. What a fantastic thing to do.
Yeah, well, I suppose that comes from my involvement just in underage football, you know, right down from obviously Joe's and the DDSLs and our even ran girls, Gaynor Cup teams and everything, you know, I just think there's a huge opportunity to engage kids, to bring parents to games. Sport is good for kids. The lifestyle's moving so fast for them. I think the attractions, you know, I have a young fellow who played from 6 until he was 18. He wanted to play for Manchester United, but now reality dawned at some stage. But he's in London working away, and he's playing football twice a week, and he goes to the gym, and, you know, hey, that's not bad with sport, you know what I mean?
Oh, very good, very good. So, looking at this season, Niall, have you given up hope of staying in the Premier League, or is there still a little bit of outside chance that you could do it?
Well, I suppose from being involved in football so long, you know, until it's never over till the fat lady sings, you know, that's the reality of it. I think the only thing that I can expect of everyone involved, and both of the coach team, the players, and I met them twice at this stage, and I'll see them again over the next couple of days as well. All I've asked is that everybody gives the absolute best, certainly on the players, is when you cross the white line, have a passion to play for the club, give it the absolute best you can. And wherever that takes us, it takes us. You know, and I don't think at this stage, I'm a realist, you know, and we've got to do the best we can. After all, these players have a huge responsibility to be role models for these kids who come and watch them every weekend. Hey, why can't they not show them the best that they've got? Whatever that may be.
I have to say, Niall, I'm really enjoying listening to you here. I think there's some great transparency. A lot of questions that people wanted asked have been answered very fairly and very openly, and fair play on that. Just to go back to one of the points you made a few moments ago there in regards to how many clubs there are in Wicklow, is that your biggest challenge now and the club's biggest challenge in terms of trying to forge links within the community and get everyone feeling like it's their club again?
Yeah, I think the clubs are one of the main stakeholders, no different than the kids in Wicklow, no different than the parents, no different than the people who were there and left. I think there's a number of different stakeholders, and they all have different you know, requirements and needs and help. And are we going to solve every one of them? Probably not. But it won't be from the want of engagement and the want of trying to get to the end game. you know. And the end game, as far as I'm concerned, is having a National League club in the county of Wicklow that everyone's proud to associate to. You know, it's like the old 80-20 rule. You know, everyone's entitled to different views, and I respect everybody's difference. But, you know, that's life.
I suppose the other big question, Niall, in terms of money's owed at the club, has the slate been wiped clean now? I know, obviously, the club you're involved with, Joey's, a lot of media reports state that they're owed money for Bray Wanderers. I suppose that's a strange situation in itself, that someone that's so heavily involved with Joey's has now taken the reins at Bray Wanderers.
Yeah, well, in fairness, I wouldn't discuss with anybody who's owed what and who's whatever in any business, some different insurance business everyone here and now and out in the football business. The reality of it is, everybody who's owed money, we're in the process of getting all that dealt with. I'm only at 4 or 5 days. You know, all the players have been paid to date. There's kids with injuries and insurance claims or whatever. We've sorted all of that out. We've dealt with the revenues. We've dealt with all of this. So, you know, and I'm trying to get the people in place and whatever. So it is a bit sort of frantic at the moment. But all the commitments are there to do that. And everything is in place for all of that to happen. So I'd love to hope by the time we finish the end of the season, you know, end of October, thereabouts, everything is clear. Everybody is whatever commitments were given by the club is honoured, you know, as I call it, the legitimate ones, you know what I mean? And everybody is looked after accordingly. And then we get down to planning the budgets for the next 2-3 years ahead, and off we go.
That's fantastic to hear, Niall. And again, thanks for your open and honesty. Final two questions, just in terms of the wages going forward for the end of the season, I'd imagine you don't envision any problems in that regard. And just on the manager situation, have you looked already maybe at getting a new manager in? Obviously, Graham Kelly doesn't have the sufficient licence, but I know you're only in the door there, so maybe it's not the first thing on your agenda, as you've mentioned there.
Yeah, well, he asked me two questions there, so maybe I'll answer one at a time there. In relation to, and I said earlier, is all the commitments that are being made in relation to paying players and all of that will be honoured and dealt with accordingly, just as running any business. So I think that kills that one off for you. In relation to, you know, Graham, the coaching staff, the players, the people that have been running the club and whatever, you know, all I'm doing is looking. I absolutely want the best people involved in the club, and there are some very good people, including Graham, and I know them of old, as the coaching staff and all of these. You know, so am I going to give you an answer on what I'm going to do yet? The reason I can't give you an answer is because I haven't a clue what I'm going to do yet, to be honest with you. I'm still looking. You know, it is where it is. And we'll evaluate all of that the best I can. And hopefully we'll get more decisions right than wrong.
Well, I know John here is a bit of a whiz at Football Manager, so maybe he can drop a CV in that direction.
You know, I'll say nothing down on that one.
Niall, you've been...
So it's probably best not putting it across in the podcast.
You've been brilliant with your time, Niall. We want to thank you very much for joining us on the show. And again, best wishes. I think everyone wants to see Bray, such a historic club. And as you mentioned, the Carlisle Ground, such a historic venue. I think everyone would love to see the County Wicklow Club rising back to fame again in the next couple of years. So thanks for joining us, and the very best of wishes.
Yeah, no, and I just, on a personal note, like, thank the Perry. It's been great. I must say, generally, the press and guys like yourself have been really supportive. I leave you with one message, you know. Can we get everyone to the Carlisle for the next couple of key games? We have our under-17s semi-final on the Bank Holiday Monday. Great game. Absolutely against Finn Harps, Luke Cracken. And we've got Dundalk, Shamrock Rovers, Finn Harps all coming to the Carlisle. So, now let's not talk about it and let's come down and see it. I'd love to see it.
Fantastic message. And just on the underage there as well, I just mentioned a good friend of ours, Willie Tyrrell, is involved there, so we'll obviously be keeping a very close eye.
I know Willie well. He's involved with the under-15s, and I actually managed Willie when he was down there in Joel's for a couple of years. Special young fella.
Yeah, great character. Look, we'll leave it there, Niall. Thanks very much for joining us, and best wishes once again.
Not at all. Keep the faith. Thanks a million.
Between the Stripes LOI podcast is proudly sponsored by Flomax. For all your compressed air, vacuum and industrial equipment needs, simply visit flomax.ie.
Okay, so it's that time of the week again, folks, where we get ready to say goodbye. Just a couple of quick messages to everyone that tuned into last week's show. There was a great jump in listener numbers last week. Thanks to all our guests who joined us last week, and thanks to those of you who tuned in. What we'd really like to see is more subscriptions on iTunes, more reviews on iTunes. That helps us push up the iTunes charts, and in turn gets our reach further to more League of Ireland fans, and those League of Ireland fans abroad as well, which is very important, so they can keep up to date with the greatest league in the world. For those of you listening to this, we'd really appreciate if you could copy the link, whatever you're listening to, Audioboom, iTunes, Mixcloud, etc., and put it up on your social media pages, your Facebook, your Twitter, share it around, make sure as many League of Ireland fans as possible can find it. We're on Twitter at Between Stripes. As I said, if you want to leave a comment to us there, use the hashtag Between the Stripes. We're on Facebook, simply search for Between the Stripes. We're on Instagram and we're on Snapchat as well, BTS1924, if you want to add us on that. Huge thanks to our sponsors. Flowmax.ie are our main sponsors. Make sure you check their website out. They always have great promotions going on. Diagia.ie, our website creators, which is betweenthestripes.ie. Make sure you check that out, where you can also access this podcast. And finally, to St. Mel's Brewery, who are the sponsors of the St. Mel's Brewery prediction game. Thanks to John. Happy Yorkshire Day. And we'll speak to you again in a fortnight's time. As I said, I'm away next week, so no show. But that just gives you more time to listen back to this fine episode. Thanks, folks. Speak to you again soon.
Subscribe to Between the Stripes LOI podcast now on iTunes, Audio Boom, Mixcloud, Pocket Cast, or Podcast Republic, and never miss an episode. You can follow us on Twitter at Between Stripes, or like us on Facebook and Instagram by searching Between the Stripes. Add us on Snapchat. Our username is BTS1924. While for all the latest League of Ireland news and updates, you can visit BetweenTheStripes.ie. Until next week, thanks for listening.